You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Ignition sequence start.
Oh, I'll tell you, Olajuwon has David Robinson just bamboozled.
Kelly out of the corner for three in it.
Don't ever underestimate the heart of a champion.
The Houston Rockets select Yao Ming.
McGrady at the buzzer. Yeah!
Chris Paul puts it up.
Goes to Harden on Thompson, steps right, shoots for the win, a three. He got it.
I know what we need to do. I know exactly what we need to do.
Russell Westbrook,
James Harden.
I know what's at stake.
It's going to be scary. Not for us.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. I am your host, Jackson Gatlin, at JT Gatlin on Twitter, producer with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship here in Houston. Today, we're going to talk about the Rockets' win over the Bulls last night. We're also going to talk some strippers, and with me here to do that is my Sports Talk 790 co-worker, Michael Connor. How's it going today, Michael?
It's good, man. We just got done with a little one-hour show and talk some Rockets. Ready to talk some more Rockets with you now.
Woohoo! All right, more
nice
Rockets.
Nice little win last night, huh?
It was a nice little win. Now, I'm going to let you steer the boat a little bit.
No, this is your podcast, man.
But you're the guest on this podcast, and I want to let you steer the boat. Can I do that?
You can do whatever you want. It's your podcast.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
I'm just happy to be here.
So, do you want to talk strippers, or do you want to talk Bulls first?
Ooh, well, we can do both, right? I mean...
We're going to talk one before the other. That's all.
So just do the Reddit thing. Go.
Okay. All right.
I saw the article or whatever that came out about James Harden and the cities with strip clubs, and I didn't get complete. I didn't dive all the way into it because I was like, oh, what a shock. James's numbers in cities where there's an extensive nightlife might not be better than when, you know, he visits like the likes of Oklahoma City.
So surprisingly, it's actually Toronto that has the worst strip clubs.
Is it?
It is. So Canadians are not, particularly...
Surprising, right? Because it's cold. Like, you'd want to stay inside. Why not stay warm inside of,
inside of something, that's for sure.
Well, you know.
All right. Well, we've got... Oh, goodness. There it goes. Wow. And it's gone already.
Sometimes
killing me.
Computers are great.
They're the absolute best.
Can you imagine being the guy, though, that sat down and took the time to think this out?
This man is a national treasure. The fact that he did this.
Or he just needs a hobby. I guess this is a hobby. Hold on, let me turn that down. My bad.
Locked On Rockets brought to you by Sports Talk 790, apparently, with a little bit of background audio. There we go.
Turn the microphone or the speakers off there.
But so James Harden, this guy on Reddit, user Angry Centrist, actually took the time to sit down and hammer out all the stats and figure out that James Harden, there is a statistical significance to James Harden and the times that he plays in cities with good strip clubs versus bad strip clubs, and that James actually performs worse, who would have thought, in cities that have good strip clubs.
Hmm.
This guy went through and compared different reviews for the top 10 strip clubs in each city with an NBA team, cross-referenced that with James's statistical outputs based on games played in those cities.
My God.
And his conclusions were... His words exactly. I have proven to a statistically significant degree that James Harden's game performance declines in cities with higher rated strip clubs.
I mean, and this is all a guess that James Harden is frequenting the strip clubs in these cities when he's there, because we don't know. I mean, but we know that James Harden has spent some ample time in these kind of places.
We do. It seems that he's toned it down in recent years, but there was definitely a period of time where it felt like pretty often you saw some social media postings of James Harden, just from random social media users, of him out at strip clubs.
Well, we know after the loss to the Spurs in the playoffs that he was at one pretty quickly.
That was the notorious one. I think that was the one that really set off the negative image where everybody just started bashing James Harden. You know, you just lost to the Spurs. But what's he going to do? I mean, once you lose, you're out.
I also hate to inform the world, NBA players... like strip clubs. It's not just a James Harden thing. It's a pretty league-wide thing where when they go to cities that have a good nightlife, and it doesn't even have to be strip clubs, when they go to cities like the Miami Flu thing, that's a real thing for every team that visits there. Like, guess what happens when these teams land in Miami? They don't go to the hotel. They get off the plane and they have vehicles waiting for them to take them to go out because they're in their, a lot of them are in their 20s. They have a lot of money and they enjoy that life. So that's what they do.
The South Beach curse.
I mean, it's very, that one is very real. I believe in that one 100% because you hear some stories about these teams that get in there again that they literally will land and there are cars waiting for them out there on the freaking tarmac to take these players where they want to go.
Now, I already gave you the fact that Toronto is the city with the worst strip clubs, and therefore, James actually has his best shooting performances in Toronto.
Limited sample size, though, once a year.
That is very true. But I think this guy, I don't know exactly how far back this guy went. Let me see. I think he did the last four seasons. So you have four games in Toronto to pull from.
Okay.
It is a small sample size, but he's working with what he's got.
Maybe James just like, you get up there to Toronto and he's like everybody else. He's like, it's too bleeping cold. I'm just going to stay in the hotel.
And then he has good games. Can you guess where his worst shooting performances come from?
Miami's got to be one of them.
It is one of them. It is the top, Harden's worst performances come in Miami.
I can't remember the last time they won a game in Miami. Like now off the top of my head. It.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
I'd have to go back. I know that they might have won there last year because Miami was bad. They've had one recently, like in the last few years, where Miami wasn't all that good, and they won a game there, and it was like a close one. But no, Miami's definitely on there. If I'm thinking for other cities where it would be bad, L.A.?
L.A.'s there, but there's a dark horse candidate that comes in at number three.
New Orleans?
Nope.
New York?
Nope.
Good Lord. Not Indianapolis?
Nope.
It would be good.
You're never going to get it.
Salt Lake City.
It is Salt Lake City.
No way.
It is Salt Lake City. Now, the Mormons love their strippers, apparently.
I will give Salt Lake City this. When you talk to people that are, when they, and you can go look at the games that they play in Salt Lake City a lot. They a lot of times end up playing on back-to-backs in Salt Lake City over the last few years. Like, they'll fly in late at night, and apparently when you land in Salt Lake City, it's nowhere near where you're staying. They have to drive like 45 minutes.
Ooh, that's a commute.
And so I had to go look exactly how many of those games are, you know, back-to-back ones where they're landing in that city at 3, 4, and 5 in the morning, and they're not getting into the hotel till like 6, and then they're, you know, trying to sleep all day and then play a game again that next night. And then there is there's still the factor of you're playing at a higher altitude. But, you know, apparently, like you said, the Mormons like their strip clubs, though, too.
Honestly, I'm surprised that Daryl Morey hasn't reached out to this guy to give him a job. This was a lot of work that went into this and a lot of, honestly, pretty solid analytical data that this guy pulled out to actually quantify the fact that James has poor shooting performances in these cities with good strip clubs.
So what are the five worst?
So the five worst, here it is. Let me pull that.
You have Salt Lake City, you have Miami.
Where did it go?
Did you say LA was in there too?
Yeah. Because, I mean, where'd that list go?
The NBA players like to go to LA too.
Oh, Reddit is killing me.
Especially when you get when those guys get the ability to play both the Clippers and the Lakers in one trip out there, they will spend some time in LA and live in that life. There's a reason those guys go out there and spend their off seasons in that city.
Definitely. And hang on, so it was, we've got Miami, then we've got Chicago at number two.
Okay.
Salt Lake City was number three. Los Angeles clocks in at number four. And he only counted Los Angeles, even though there's two teams there. Los Angeles is one city.
Okay,
so
yeah.
For the purposes of the math, it's just on there once. And then New Orleans was number five.
As you would expect.
Yeah.
New Orleans will do that. It's always good. So if they're playing New Orleans, what you have to hope for, I think they had this issue a few years ago. They had to stay in Baton Rouge because, you know, there's certain standards for what they have to, what NBA teams can stay in for hotels. Like, they have to stay in five-star hotels. Like, it's collectively bargained into the CBA.
Is that really? Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
no, I know.
And cool. There were no hotels available. This might have been last year or the year before. There were no hotels for one of the trips available at the NBA. They had to stay in Baton Rouge and bus to New Orleans that day.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So just hope for those when they go to New Orleans.
Well, there we go. Hopefully all the five-stars are booked. The bottom three were actually, so we already established Toronto's down there, Cleveland and Charlotte. Yeah, there's nothing going on in those cities.
I've never
apparently.
Been to Charlotte. I've been in the airport in Charlotte as a connection to get to Cleveland, actually. But I can see Cleveland. Have you been to Cleveland?
I've never been to Cleveland, no.
Not much.
Okay.
Downtown's right. Decent, but there is not much going on there. It's kind of, it gets the rep of a not great city, and you understand it when it's a very old city.
Well, this isn't exactly hard-hitting news. Obviously, we've known about the relationship that James Harden has shared with his we'll say his extracurricular activities over the years involving strip clubs, but it was a fun little divey piece that a Reddit user came up with, and usually this type of material comes into fruition during the NBA offseason when there's a drought of content. So it's kind of random that this cropped up in the middle of the season, although it was sparked by that absolutely horrid performance in Miami where the Rockets got absolutely obliterated in that first quarter. They kind of fought their way back in the sense that they were dead even the rest of the game, but there was such a gap in that first quarter they just couldn't make it up.
And again, I will always chalk up whenever I see the Miami, and you're always hoping that the Miami game is on the schedule is a back-to-back, and there's not a chance to really go out because they get there so late, but even then they still might go out.
And it was an early tip too.
Yeah, it was. And they played the night before, or no, they played the next night, right, in Memphis.
That's right. Memphis was on, so it was a back-to-back, but it was on the front end.
Yeah. You don't hope, I always kind of hope that it's the back end of the back-to-back, and we're going to arrive in Miami at 6:30 in the morning, so go to bed. Don't go out, please. But that one, whenever you see that game on the schedule, I always chalk it up as a loss.
Definitely.
No matter what Miami looks like. And, you know, they look a little bit better now, so there's that.
Miami's no joke. They're a serious team, and the Rockets are going to see them again at the end of this month here in Houston. Now, we're going to talk about the Bulls game in just a moment, but before we get there, a quick message from our friends over at Indochino. Indochino is the world's largest made-to-measure menswear brand, and you can start your style upgrade now with $30 off of your total purchase of $399 or more at Indochino.com when you enter code LOCKEDON at checkout. Again, that is code LOCKEDON at checkout. All right, and we are back here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. I'm here with Michael Connor from Sports Talk 790, and we're going to break down the 117-94 win by your Houston Rockets in Chicago last night in a game where, honestly, the first half was pretty spotty at times. A lot of turnovers.
That's been the theme, right? Like the sluggish starts to everything are a little, and it's frustrating as a fan to watch it when they come out and like, you score 20 points in the first quarter against a Bulls team that you should just be beating the you know what out of, but they find their way, don't they?
They definitely do. That third quarter was absolutely dominant. They came out, scored the ball very efficiently. That's kind of when the 3-point shot really caught fire, 36-18 in that third quarter. But the first half was really characterized by a lot of turnovers. They had 15 turnovers at halftime. They average 15 on the season. That number has gone up since last night, but they were averaging, I think it was 15.6, which was right kind of middle of the pack. They were like either 12th or 13th in the league in turnover percentage as of last night before the game. So going into last night's game and then turning the ball over that often in the first half, that's why it was just 50-49 at the half.
Yeah, the number jumped to 16.6 per game.
There we go.
Last night.
Okay.
That's 23rd in the league.
Yeah, that's not good.
No.
You can't turn the ball over that many times. But it was uncharacteristic. They've actually taken care of the ball so far this season. Russell Westbrook, James Harden, they're averaging their turnovers, which is fine because you know they're going to turn the ball over. But for the most part, everybody else, all the role players, nobody else is turning the ball over, which is what happened differently last night. You had Eric Gordon, 4 turnovers. Clemens had 1, but that was garbage time, so it's kind of whatever. Daniel House had 4 turnovers. When you have guys handling the ball that aren't named James or Russ, if they're turning the ball over, that's immediately bad offense because you have the ball in somebody's hands that isn't Harden or Westbrook. And so are those possessions going to be worthwhile? Probably not. And then you're going to have to play transition defense, which the team is not good at. They're bad at defending in transition.
They're good at running when they're on the offensive side of it. That's for sure. But you know, you're right. And that's something that they've always struggled with, right? I mean, they're a team that is going to turn the ball over. Like you said, we know that every single night, basically. You know, to me, it's just watching them offensively, and I don't know what you're seeing necessarily from it, but it's just, it doesn't feel like there's no flow yet. That's the biggest walk away I have. Like, there's a flow at times, but there's still this kind of feeling out how to work inside of it, especially when you have James and Russ out there, because they're two guys that need the ball in their hand, and Russ can't. That was the kind of the brilliance of having Chris Paul with James, was that he could be a spot up guy and didn't have to have the ball. To get like peak Russ, you got to hand it to him and let him work. Like, I think just finding the consistent, like, as they find the chemistry, it just builds over time. Like, spacing's clearly something that they have to work out, because there's no reason to, if like Russ is standing on the 3-point line, there's no reason for the defending team to even cover him. Like, just let him stand there.
No, you're playing 4-on-5 at that point.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think just finding that kind of flow, and it's early in the season, and again, they're 6-3 through 9, but like, that's the one thing that sticks out to me. They're just kind of trying to find the flow too, and they're shooting the ball better, which is good news. Now, Eric Gordon's not shooting the ball, but James's numbers are ticking up. The team having these games where they're making 23s. Like, when they make 23s, we know that they rarely lost a game last year when they made 23s.
There's definitely a metric floating around out there where when they score, you know, when they hit more than, what was it, 20 or 21 three-pointers or something, that they were, I don't know, the loss column's in the single digits when that happens.
Yeah. So you do those. As long as James is not having a just putrid night, you're in every game, right?
Pretty much. And Russell Westbrook was having a putrid night. That first half was pretty rough. And honestly, the start of the third quarter was rough as well. But there was a point, and it was either end of the third, beginning of the fourth, I'm trying to remember correctly, where the lead started to dwindle. And Mike D'Antoni actually called a timeout before the double-digit lead was gone. I was so proud of him in that moment, because that is such an issue that most fans have with Mike D'Antoni, is that he doesn't know how to stop the bleeding. He simply just lets the guys try and play through whatever funk they're in, lets the other team go on this huge run, and we've lost games. We've seen it happen time and time again where a team goes on a run, D'Antoni refuses to try and call a timeout or refuses to change the lineup that's in the game, and we see the Rockets lose leads. And he didn't let that happen last night. He stormed out on the court. He was furious, waving his arms around. He was actually pissed when he walked out on the court. And right after that, Westbrook went on a tear. Westbrook scored like 3 or 4 baskets in a row, all right at the rim. So I don't know what D'Antoni said in that timeout, but it was, we need more of that from Russ.
Yeah, I feel like he's been more vocal and more like that. I mean, he called them downright soft a few games ago with their, I mean, he's called out their effort. And we know these are guys that are making, and they're a veteran team that's been there, done that. Like, and that's the battle the head coach has to deal with, of getting through the early portion of the season where these guys kind of go through the motions, right? Like, there's a little bit of that going on. And it's not just them. It's a league-wide thing for teams that are like them. But, you know, they know that they can roll the ball out and they're more talented than most of the teams that they're going to play. And he's clearly battled that early on. And I'm with you, like, seeing him call a timeout there and do what he needs to do. And if clearly he's trying to learn coaching Russell Westbrook, maybe screaming at Russ and screaming at the team, like, ignites Russ to, when he's good, crazy Russ, that you, like you're mentioning there, that's good, crazy Russ. When he comes out and boom, 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 right at the rim, attack and do what he does, like, that's an igniter for a team.
Now, we've got, it's not a huge sample size, but 9 games. How do you think the Russ and James Harden experiment has fared so far?
I mean, I think it's good. I think I keep going back to, again, just finding the balance of it. Finding how you, I mean, I think Russ is clearly bought in. He came here knowing this is James's team. James the top dog. James the best player in the league, probably. He's one of the 3 best players in the league, but offensively might be the best offensive player in the damn game still. He's just that stupid good. And Russ can be that guy. You know, when James doesn't have it going, seeing how they work that, who dominates the ball. Like, that's the thing that I'm still trying to figure out, like, where their comfort level is and how they, I mean, I think the offense, it's just a little, would you call it wild at times? Like, it's
when Westbrook's at the helm, definitely.
Yeah.
And it's a little chaotic.
That's something we maybe haven't seen. It was a slower pace the last couple of years. It was more of the half court game, and I'm going to have no issue with watching them get a little crazy and get a little wild and, you know, not play that slow down, get in the half court, let James dribble, 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 dribble. And if there's more movement to it, I'm good with that. I would like to see, you know, I think Clint Capella's been a little funky to start the year.
He's battling that kind of like minor shoulder injury or something.
Yeah.
He, not even just Capella, but the entire team didn't come into the season in shape. Mike D'Antoni's called them out on that too. Their conditioning's not quite where they're at or where he wants them at. That's why he let the starters play so many minutes last night. I mean, you got Clint Capella.
41 for Capella, yeah.
Yeah, 41, 42 minutes. You've got Harden at 36. Westbrook, I was happy that he pulled out when he did, because Westbrook's still recovering from that knee scope. You know, he's got the dislocated fingers he's dealing with on his shooting hand. So even if Westbrook is one of the guys, which honestly, you look at Westbrook and it doesn't look like he has an ounce of body fat on him. So he's probably not one of the guys that's out of shape, quote unquote. But it's nice to see that D'Antoni actually pulled him out. But the rest of the guys, yeah, let him get some burn.
Yeah, do it. And, you know, you got to find – you got also got to have some of those guys out there to shoot. What do you got to do when you're shooting poorly, especially for the likes? You got to shoot your way out of it, right? So some of these guys got to shoot their way into playing their typical level of basketball. But I think overall, and you're asking that just the – the worries that a lot of people had that, oh, it can't work having James and Russell out there. We knew that, like it was with Chris Paul, the people that freaked out, it's going to work. They're going to find their roles, and they're going to find what they need to do offensively. Like, it's so different overall from what we've seen. One thing I have loved, and I'm sure you have too, Daniel House looks good shooting the ball.
Daniel House, Ackerman mentioned it last night on the TV broadcast, and I completely agree with him. Daniel House, I think, has been the most consistent player for the Rockets to start this season.
Completely agree.
James had his shooting struggles to start. He's kind of started to find his rhythm now. He was still putting up points because he had a couple nights where he got, you know, 20-plus free throw attempts, which is just insane to think about. So James was still getting his points, but he wasn't doing it efficiently. Then Westbrook's had moments where he's looked great, and he's had moments where he's looked absolutely lost as a Rocket. PJ Tucker's been great, but he's also had some quiet games where he's, you know, getting 2-3 shot attempts a game, which you got to get those numbers up for PJ. For a guy who's as good of a shooter as he is in the corner, you got to get him at least probably 4, 5, 6 attempts a game from that spot.
Yeah, you'd love to.
But Daniel House has been a bright spot in an inconsistent Rockets team.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, he's shooting, 47 from three is that... I would go ahead and guess that he's not going to keep that number, but look, if the guy wants to shoot over 40% from three and be that small forward, and that, you know, for years it was the Ariza role where he wasn't a great three-point shooter, but he was average to above average when you needed it to be. But if he wants to be well above average and he's beyond capable on the defensive side of the basketball of being a guy that can do some things, he's still a younger player, but there's enough, you know, track record with him getting to where he is now as the player that he is to where I think you trust him a little bit more than some people would be like, oh, he's a young guy. Why would you trust him to be an overall player? But he's been a very bright spot. And look, if they can keep that number, he's averaging just like right there 13 points per game. Like, that feels like a sweet spot. If you can get between 13 and 15 from him a night and have the blow up night where he's, you know, 20 something points and be that real legit, I mean, because Clint's your third guy. But if Daniel House can be like your true outside scorer on the wing, that's a huge boost to this team. Because, and I think we're seeing it too, don't you? I mean, the loss of Gerald Green is real.
It really is, and they haven't found a guy to fill that role yet. We've seen moments from Ben McLemore where it looks like maybe he can be that guy who comes off the bench, gives you some energy, can come in cold and just start jacking up threes and ideally hit some of them. He's got that quick release. He can elevate. He can shoot. But Gerald Green, for a lot of the head-scratching moments that Gerald Green does give you, both offensively and defensively, he gives you heart. He gives you hustle. He lifts the spirits of the team, which you can't undersell that for a team that really needs, you know, some vocal leaders. You've got PJ, you've got Russ now, but he's the new guy. Maybe he's not being as vocal as he was on the OKC team, but the absence of Gerald Green has been felt. Absolutely.
Even if Gerald's never going to be the consistent shooter, consistent scorer, like, because he's going to have the nights like you're mentioning with PJ, you know, he's going to have a night where he plays 15 minutes and has no points. And then he's going to have a night where he plays close to 30. And we know this, he can just go off.
Absolutely.
And he can put up 20 something points. Like, that's to me, of all the things early on, like, that's where Daryl Morey's work is going to have to be. And whether that comes with, you know, getting a little lucky again on a buyout market or finding some sort of trade that you can execute. And Eric Gordon, we know this. I don't know still what the best role with Eric Gordon is on this team. He's going to play 30 minutes a night, whether it's as the starter, whether it's off of the bench. Once he finds his shot, they need that. And maybe it would be nice, I think, to, you know, for him to be off the bench and to be the sixth man type of thing. But he's still going to play starters minutes. To have that would be good. But to find that other scoring option similar to a Gerald Green off the bench is something that they clearly need.
All right, and welcome back into Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. As we wrap up this final segment, we're going to talk a little bit about the competition around the league. Some teams are underperforming, others are overperforming, and we're also going to visit the schedule coming up, which I mentioned in the last pod. The Rockets have a bit of a gauntlet coming up here. What do you think about these next, you know, 8 or so games for the team, Michael.
You're right. This is where we're going to get the good test of can they start to piece together some really good, consistent basketball with the opponents being so much better. Clippers a couple of times this month before the calendar switches to December.
With Paul George coming back, probably on that Wednesday game here in Houston against LA.
Yeah, and then you'll get them Wednesday. You'll get the Denver Nuggets later in the month in Denver, and then at the Clippers. It's definitely going to – it's a good early season test for a team that's had some ups and downs and had some defensive lapses and whatnot to get some – I'd rather them kind of get thrown into it a little bit after starting to, you know, get it clicking like this and see where they're at and get a better feel for where you're going with this season.
They're definitely going to need Eric Gordon to kind of up his performance a bit from the – honestly, just the ridiculous way that he's been playing to start the season. When you were I think he's the third highest paid guy on the roster now after his extension. It's either him or Capella, but I kind of view them. Obviously, you've got James Harden. He's your number one option. Russell Westbrook right behind him. But then to me, you've got Capella and Eric Gordon, who on any given night could be your third best player, essentially. Daniel House can kind of...
Yeah, I mentioned House is third, and I was totally forgetting Eric Gordon. But like, I guess that's just the starter is what I'm thinking of in your starting lineup of being that guy. But yeah, your third score, it's Eric Gordon, right?
Yeah. He's got to be the guy that puts the ball in the bucket, because there are going to be nights where James just doesn't have it or Russ doesn't have it.
Fourth highest paid player on the team right now, by the way, for this season.
Behind Capella?
Yeah, behind Capella.
Okay, there we go. I think it's because his extension doesn't kick in yet this season.
Even next year, he'll be the fourth highest. He'll be behind Capella every year.
Okay, all right. There we go.
Just barely in the last year of the deal. Barely.
All right, wow. Okay, Capella's contract's a little bit bigger than I remember it being, but either way, you've got Eric Gordon, and he's got to give you more than what he's been giving you. And to get through this next gauntlet, about 8 games, I'm not counting the Atlanta game at the very end of it. You know, Trae Young, great player, but I'm not writing off Atlanta either. Honestly, it is a game you should win. But the 8 games leading up to that, I think the Pacers are probably the weakest team in that bunch. Minnesota, maybe right after that, but you've got Karl Anthony Towns, who is just dominating this season. And then you've got Andrew Wiggins, who really, even though Wiggins is inconsistent, he can go off and play like Michael Jordan on any given night. And then he can also put up, you know, go...
a big old fat dud like we've seen him do against the Rockets a bunch of times.
Exactly. So you don't know which version of Andrew Wiggins you're going to get. So you can't exactly write off the Timberwolves. But for that entire stretch, that 8-game stretch, I want to say 6-2 is possible, but I feel like 5-3 is more realistic, or even 4-4. I mean, that's going to be a brutal stretch.
You can't do worse than 4-4. I mean, it being this kind of team, even with some of the worries that you do have and Eric Gordon not playing his capability, like, no worse than 4-4 in that 8-game stretch. But I'm with you. Like, you want to be optimistic. Can they go 6-2 in that stretch? Absolutely. They got home games too, which is good. I mean, it's better to play those games at home, right? The majority of them. And I think the majority of them are at home.
They are, but that back-to-back, the Pacers here in Houston and then having to fly the very next night all the way up to face the T-Wolves, that's going to be a little bit of a rough back-to-back. If they can go 6-2, and now we're also, they've got to take care of business against the Pelicans.
Yeah.
Pelicans are bottom of the Western Conference, and yeah, Brandon Ingram is putting up ridiculous stats, but you just got to find a way to contain him.
It's a young team.
You can't put PJ Tucker on Ingram. I'm sorry. You just can't do it. Oh. You need length on him. And maybe they'll recall Gary Clark. Maybe they'll actually play Gary Clark.
I know you're always
Clark.
Pining for some Gary Clark.
Dude, I think he could be so helpful to this team, and it bothers the ever-living hell out of me that Mike D'Antoni will not play him.
Yeah, I get it. Like, he definitely has the defensive side of it. And like, he showed in flashes last year that he can knock down threes. I mean, and with the Gerald Green stuff, maybe they, you know, not having him, maybe they think about it soon. Because you're right, he's one of those guys that you're comfortable at least with some of the versatility to put on some of those guys, even if he's a young player.
And even though he's going to make young player mistakes if you do play him, the Rockets have a small team. They have a small, unathletic team at certain positions. Mm-hmm. And running PJ Tucker as your stretch five in the lineups where they go small ball, you can run Gary Clark as a stretch five and PJ Tucker side by side. And Gary Clark showed in flashes last year that he can be a huge help as a weak side defender. He's got the length. He can rebound. And offensively, what does he have to do different than any other Rockets player? Nothing. He just has to sit in the corner and be ready to shoot a three ball when it comes his way.
Right. And if he can knock down one or two of them, you feel like that's good enough, honestly. Like if he was getting 20 minutes in a game, you'd be fine with... I mean, I'd be okay with the one if he's playing solid defense. If you're getting 5 points out of him, that's probably okay. His defense is really good, but they, you know, like you mentioned, that's another thing is some of the size, and you're going to see that as you start to play some of the better teams in the Western Conference. Like, they're going to be undersized against some of these teams. They're going to be undersized against the Lakers. They're going to be undersized against Clippers. They're going to be undersized against Denver, but they just are Denver's daddy to where that never really, I don't know what it is. I just don't fear them against Denver.
I mean, Denver tried to intentionally lose games to not have to face the Rockets in the playoffs last year, and it worked.
Yeah.
So to their credit, their crazy plan to rest guys and lose games on purpose worked because they were that afraid of having to deal with James Harden and the Houston Rockets. Now, out of the other Western Conference teams, the Lakers have played exceptionally well. What are your thoughts on them so far?
LeBron is still LeBron.
Still LeBron.
And people in his whole tweeting out washed king. Come on, dude. Nobody thinks you're washed at all. You're an older player, yes, and you know, but he's still great. I do watch them and think, you know, Kuzma hadn't had the greatest start, right, to his season overall.
Yeah.
They're lacking a little bit, and you see it. They're lacking, I think, the playmaker that can handle the ball when it's not LeBron. Like, it feels like it has to be LeBron.
It does.
That's facilitating everything.
And that's because they don't have Rajon Rondo back
right.
yet.
And if they get him back and see what he does, they like Caruso. I do know that. And, you know, how much trust are you going to put in that guy? But, you know, you see the value of what LeBron had when he had Kyrie. And, like, LeBron he can't be everything. And it's kind of like James, like, here in Houston. At some point, that stuff is like it's going to catch you because LeBron, you can be the point guard, but you shouldn't be the point guard, right? Like you need for him to be his peak and for his team to be the peak. Like they need some sort of playmaking, but they're still really good. Like and they've got depth with big men. Even if you don't like their big men, they've got some serious depth there.
Dwight Howard. Yeah. Oh goodness,
that one's fun. JaVale McGee. Who am I missing?
What a 1-2 punch at your center spot, Dwight Howard and JaVale McGee.
It's pretty wild to think about, but I mean, they're going to be good. They're going to be really good. The Clippers team, when you're watching them, Kawhi's an animal,
and we haven't seen them at full strength yet.
No, we haven't, and we'll see how it goes with Paul George. They play hard though, and I hate that. I hate that they're because I wanted to be like, hey, you know, maybe the first year it'll be. You know, it'll be good, but it won't be great. No, they're gonna be great. They're for Montrezl Harrell.
West Coast Rockets, man.
To Pat, to what Lou Williams can do for them, like they're going to be filthy, and they're definitely going to be tough to get through in the Western Conference. But yeah, even though Denver's sitting at 6-2, it's been kind of a okay 6-2, right? I think that the back end of the Western Conference isn't going to be as potentially lethal as it has been in the last few years. You know what I mean?
Definitely. And we have to talk about them, and I might have to brush my teeth afterwards, but Dallas.
Yeah.
KP and Luka.
Yeah.
When that trade happened, I
was terrified.
How Mark Cuban gets to luck into these just amazing players. He had Dirk for his entire career, and now he's got KP and Luka locked up. This is the Mavericks are a scary team, and they're playing well to start the season.
Yeah, and they haven't lost a road game yet, I believe. I think they're still undefeated on the road. They're 4-0 away from home. They're 2-3 at home, and they're usually incredible in Dallas. Like, that's a tough place to always play. As much as we don't like Dallas, that arena is always packed.
And they did
loud.
Lose that nail biter against the Knicks. So yeah. That could, you know, that's kind of one of those 50-50 games, could have gone either way. So,
but they're definitely like, especially when you get, because Porzingis the first year back with this, you know, coming back from this injury, like he's looked good, right? But he hasn't, you know that a guy coming back, it's going to take a time for him to be like peak type of Porzingis, which is an all-star level player. They're terrifying. They're going to be really good for a very long time. And Rick Carlisle's career is going to continue because he's a really good coach too.
Like good on Carlisle too and Mark Cuban. And again, it feels horrible saying good things yeah. about the Mavericks, but you have to appreciate good ownership and good coaching when you see it, I think. And kudos to Carlisle for sticking it out after the championship, running through a rebuild, and now he's got two generational talents under his belt. He's got a team that is on the rise that could very easily make the playoffs this year and is only going to get better as Luka and KP gel, get their chemistry down, and that's going to be a scary duo for years to come.
Now, what if they're able to make the, and we've seen some rumors about it, what if Chris Paul ended up there? What does that mean? That is an intriguing, as much as we might not, Chris Paul, you hate that contract. You're trading for that contract, you hate it. But Chris Paul with those guys, it's a good fit. If he's healthy to facilitate and to be, you know, he's not, I think we saw in the playoffs last year, like Chris Paul's taking a massive step back defensively. He is not able to keep guys in front of him. Like, that's an issue. But he's still going to give you the effort in the biggest moments. And he's a leader. As much as he can drive people nuts, he's a leader.
And he's a good team defender. He might not be as great of a one-on-one defensive threat as he used to be. He's not going to lock anybody down, but he's a great team defender. And putting that on a young Mavericks team and kind of being able to guide them to the playoffs.
Kind of like Kidd when, you know, I mean, like...
Yeah.
Like Kidd was when they won the championship. But that team wasn't as young.
It wasn't, but, you know, Kidd was the most seasoned vet out of that group. I mean, he was, you know, at the very tail end of his career. I wonder if he was 35, 36 when he made it to the Mavs?
Close to 40. I mean, definitely close to 40 at that point.
And Dirk had playoff burn before then, and, you know, that Mavericks team did have playoff experience. But Jason Kidd had a finals appearance with the Nets, yeah. I think. And so that team, you know, was pieced together. Now, I think depending on the assets they would have to give up to get Chris Paul, is it worth it for a guy who is at the tail end of his career?
Probably not.
Now, the other side of that coin is Chris Paul will be an expiring contract in that final year of his deal. And they could very easily benefit from Chris Paul, a couple of years of him under the belt, and then maybe flip him into another piece to pair with a KP and a Luka that are kind of hitting their prime or, you know, just outside of hitting their prime together. I don't know. I mean, the Mavericks are going to be scary. I'm not ready to hate Chris Paul yet. If I see him in a Mavericks jersey, I'm going to have to hate him.
I mean, yeah, it's going to come back to your feelings you had for him as a Clipper. But like, to me, that they are one addition away in terms of a player, you know, some sort of, because, I mean, Lucas, he's one of those guys you want the ball in his hand, but I think you'd like to have a good, solid veteran point guard to where at the end of games, maybe facilitating a little bit and not, because Lucas is still young and he's gonna have turnovers and stuff, but he's incredible. I don't know. Just to me, that feels like a really good fit for that team, and with a veteran coach in Carlisle and trusting, like, and I hate it. I hate it just like you, because they are going to be good and absolutely. It's early in the season. I thought before.
It's good for basketball. It's just bad for the Rockets.
I do think that they're a playoff team this year. I really do. And I think that they could end up being a top five in the West type of team.
Now, this isn't Locked On Mavericks. So no. Sorry for that kind of segue into the Dallas Mavericks. But they are a very real threat, and we have to talk about them. We have to talk about the threats to your Houston Rockets. However, before we get out of here, I do have one question. Eric Gordon isn't tradable. He signed the contract extension. You're not going to trade James Harden. You're not going to trade Russell Westbrook. The team has limited avenues for improvement.
Yeah.
If that becomes necessary after the trade deadline, or not after the trade deadline, once players become trade eligible, I should say. Do you think there's a possibility Clint Capela gets dealt?
I thought that after the way that it ended last year in the playoffs, like, I was on board with trading Clint Capela.
Is there a guy out there that you have in mind that could fill that gap and still provide what he gives?
That's the hard thing is who is it? And I don't know if there is anybody. Because you can't trade Clint Capela for a non-center.
You have
right?
to get another five back, yeah.
Yeah, because you're already lacking size as it is. And as much as – I think Clint's peak was last season. Like, that's the peak Clint year, like, in terms of regular season numbers. He's a somewhere between 13 and 17 points at best per night guy, and he's a 10 to 14 rebound in his best year, and he's really good, and he can protect the rim, and he's good inside the pick and roll, and that's the issue that you also deal with, because for what he does, and he understands and works at his role, he's perfect to play with James. He's perfect to play in that, hey, give me the ball at the rim, and you're not running offense through me, I'll run the floor. But there's just something like if you do feel that you need to go over the top and make some sort of move. And again, I don't know who it could be. I don't think that there's going to be anybody out there that you could go trade for that at this moment that you're thinking is going to be on the radar. Do you have anybody?
I do. I don't know how they would make it work logistically. I think the contracts are similar, but you have to find a way to make it more enticing. Would be Miles Turner.
God, see, and I don't like Miles Turner.
Why not?
Because I just don't. I don't think he's the five that they necessarily need from the standpoint of I don't like his – I just don't think he's a great rebounder overall for being that kind of guy.
Okay.
I don't trust his defense. I think there's been some questions about conditioning and whatnot. That's one thing I can give Clint. Clint works his ass off. And I don't think you're ever going to get the lack of hustle and the lack of work from Clint, like a guy like that worries me.
That's true. Now, Miles Turner does have the three-point shot in his game.
That is, yeah.
And watching the times where Russell Westbrook does get to work with a five-out offense, I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but it looks cleaner when the paint isn't clogged up with Capella or Chandler and Westbrook is able to have guys five out and just drive straight to the bucket. But is that really worth losing, like you said, what Capella provides? And he provides it so well, that his little niche role that he plays within this Rocket system as a rim runner. He does his job. He anchors the paint on defense. Once he gets his conditioning back, I think there's been some questions. I've seen some questions on Rocket's Twitter about, you know, does the increased weight that Capella's added since, you know, his first year as a starter, 16-17 season, you know, he was a little underweight for being a five. You know, he was clocked in probably about 220. James Harden might have weighed more than Clint Capella did. And he's put on a lot of muscle mass, but he's also slowed down a little bit because of all that mass that he's added. It's not, you know, he's not fat. He's bigger now, which is good for guarding some opposing bigs, but it also limits his ability to guard successfully on the perimeter in a switch-heavy scheme. A lot of different issues come with that. So do the pros outweigh the cons?
And I think we're at the point, too, don't you, where, and when you're considering trading Clint Capella, that is such a shock to your... I think that unless you're getting a player that is, without a doubt, better than he is overall, you run a major risk of doing too much of a shakeup in the middle of a season compared to doing that in the offseason where you have camp and the limited preseason to work it in. I think throwing something in the middle of the season where you're trading away a piece like him, I would have a hard time doing that given that if it's not a guarantee that the player is absolutely 100% better than he is, than Clint is, and better for the role that you need out of the center position.
That's very true. And ultimately, it is a small sample size, but the Rockets are 6-3. You can't, have the games been beautiful? Not specifically, no. They've struggled here and there, but they're 6-3. They're not 1-4 like last season. They're not digging themselves out of an 11-14 start.
There's no Carmelo Anthony.
There's no Carmelo Anthony this year. There's no James Ennis. There's no Michael Carter Williams.
Oh, thank God.
Now, are the other role players phenomenal? Tabo Sefolosha and Tyson Chandler have been a little bit underwhelming. Mike D'Antoni is still rolling with a 7-8-man rotation, which is a little frustrating. So, like you said earlier, they are going to need to get some help on the buyout market down the line. The loss of Gerald Green really did hurt the team. I feel like D'Antoni would be running a 9- or 10-man rotation if he had Gerald Green. But we'll see more of that as the schedule progresses, as the season moves along. Is there anything you want to plug before we get you out of here, Michael?
I mean, just every single day, 6 to 10 a.m. on the Sean Salisbury Show on Sports Talk 790. I do some Rockets as well. I have like one game a week, pre- and post-game coverage. So you can catch me there, and you know, that's about it. Watching the Rockets. Now that baseball's done, diving hard into this, and again, like you're mentioning just there at the very end, fingers crossed that the buyout market gives you something beautiful like it did last year, because they lucked into it to an extent with what they got, and I think you're going to need that big time this year.
Absolutely. And remind us your Twitter handle one more time.
MC790 is the place to find me.
All right, go follow him on Twitter right now if you're not already doing it, although I'm sure most of you are. As always, thank you for tuning in. Now, if you want more content before our next show, social media is where it's all happening. I'm on there at JT Gatlin, Michael's on there at MC790, and the show is on there at Locked On Rockets. Past that, there's Facebook, which can be found at facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, the website, which is, of course, LockedOnRockets.com, and the email, LockedOnRockets@gmail. All of these are different ways to consume content about your Houston Rockets, ask me questions about the team, you can make suggestions for the show, place advertising inquiries. Really, in general, it's just for you to let me know if there's anything that we can do to improve this experience for you, our listeners. Beyond that, if you would be kind enough to subscribe and rate the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Himalaya, wherever it is that you listen to your podcasts, if you could please subscribe and give us a 5-star review. That's how you get the benefit of episodes straight to your inbox before they're published to the previously mentioned social media outlets, and we get the benefit of looking attractive to potential advertisers and keeping this business model rolling along as the most regular podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. Again, for this Sunday, November 10th, this is where we break. As always, thank you so much for listening, and we hope to have you back again very soon right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.